Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for staying with us. Now, last week, you'll remember that we had a conversation with the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Honorable Debo Kholitsiye, and he promised, and I think maybe I bullied him into coming back in, but he has very graciously agreed to speak to us this week because they are in Johannesburg, and they're not going to be speaking only to WITS. They've got other institutions that they're going to be visiting as well. So we wanted to have that conversation and also a conversation about other meetings that they had and held earlier on today. A very good evening, and thank you so much, Honorable Letsie, and welcome to Joburg.
Well, thank you very much, and good evening to yourself, and good evening to the listeners. I'm not sure if welcoming me to Johannesburg is appropriate since I stay...
As the committee. As the committee. You're representing the committee.
Yes, no, thank you very much, and thanks for welcoming us in your city.
So what brings the committee here this week?
So this week we are doing an oversight to institutions of higher learning in Gauteng. Today we went to Tshwane South Tibet College to look at what is it that they are doing when parents send students or their children to Tshwane South Tibet College. What is it that they are taught? Mm-hmm. So we went there today, spent the whole day, finished just after 6. And I must say that at least from the engineering point of view that is being taught there, we're very impressed with that part. We still remain concerned about the governance issues at our institutions, but I think that governance issues, they continue to overshadow the work that these people are doing at our institutions. Tomorrow we are at Gauteng Community Education and Training Facility in Benoni to look at CETs are institutions that when we grew up they used to be called ABET. So we are going to the provincial one called Gauteng CET to look at what is it that they are doing to reduce the number of young people who do not have matric in Gauteng, and how do they track them, and the kind of curriculum they're doing, they're teaching them in order to reduce. On Wednesday, we were at CJC, the Central Johannesburg TVET College, not far from here at Ellis Park, to look at the work that they are doing there. And on Thursday, we were at UNISA. You'll remember that UNISA is the largest university in Africa, in essence, with more than 400,000 students, many of them who are coming from here at home. So on Thursday, we are at UNISA. And then on Friday, it's that meeting that we spoke about last week, where we'll be having NSFAS department, accommodation providers coming here. I listened to yourself when you're talking about some of the accommodation providers who ask for sexual favors from stranded students. So we are going to have them in our meetings with the department, with the students' unions, SAUS and SAFETA, the department and NSFAS and USAF, a body representing universities and a body representing TVET colleges, to try and find a solution to the impasse that around the student accommodation. So that is why we're here for the whole week, and then from there we are going back to our little cocoon where we come from.
You know, last week one of the things that came out, and I'm not suggesting this is the issue with Tshwane TVET College, one of the things that came out from the student representatives' body is that there is no engagement when it comes to the curriculum issue. There is a curriculum that that's adopted in their absence, and they feel it needs to be reviewed, or at least they need to be invited in conversations around the curriculum. You spoke just now about you having to assess the curriculum at Tshwane. What did you find there?
Two things. One, on the engineering part, they do have fit for purpose because they've got a partnership with industry, so that when they produce these artisans, they are able to be absorbed easily in the industry. The acting principal of the institution did admit that in the business management curriculum, it's a bit, it's not a bit, but it's outdated.
Okay.
The principal himself admitted that it's outdated. The students would have raised it again that those who graduate or who get certificates from that kind of thing, there's a bit of a challenge in them getting employment because it is outdated. We were in the meeting with the department and we asked the department, what is it that they are doing? I mean, why are we funding qualifications that, become dormant immediately when you
graduate?
When you graduate, we train you for the streets, in essence. So the department did say that they have started with QCTO. They've been in engagement trying to update the curriculum there. But on Friday again, when we're with the minister and the director general in the meeting, it's our take home for them. They must be able to help us assist. I mean, how many students across the 50 TVET colleges, the 252 campuses that we have in the country, how many of them are doing that business management that is outdated? How much money are we funding or are we putting there through NSFAS for training people who will not find employment tomorrow? So it's a big issue for us. Indeed, the students should form part together with industry on the curriculum that must come in. I mean, we're in the era of artificial intelligence, robotics. These are the conversations that they must have to say, look, we believe that because these people through these TikToks and social media, they are able to see what other kids in China are doing in grade 7 and grade 8. But here in South Africa, the curriculum that we are covering in institutions of higher learning don't even come close to that. So I think those are the conversations that will also push the ministry to have with the role players in the sector.
Does that speak somewhat to the limitations of the Higher Education Act?
No, it does. Look, the Higher Education Act is a big problem, and I'll tell you why on a number of levels. The first level is that when an institution is collapsing, you have people who are generally unethical, who because they had qualifications, because they were certificated at some point that they have a degree, they have a master's, they end up leading our institutions, but there are no ethics. So they look at the budget that comes into this institution as something that they must feast on. And this is not me being sensational. I mean, that has happened. It continues to happen in some of our institutions. So these people, they find themselves in the higher echelons of our institutions. They are in charge of this budget. People, whistleblowers, write to the ministry, write to whoever. There's nothing that the minister, according to the act, there's nothing that the minister can do or the department can do to stop it from continuing further. Because the act only says it empowers the minister, section 43 and 44, only empowers the minister. At the later stage, it says when there is proven collapse, it is only then that you can put in an independent assessor. Even then, after you have consulted the same people about the collapse that they are bringing to the institution. So it's a bit weak, the Higher Education Act, in our view.
And the casing point is what happened in Fort Hare, where there was the perception that the department was not getting involved soon enough, but lives were at stake.
Yeah.
And the tension between how the institution feels supported and the ministry not being able to do, beyond what is mandated to them.
Yeah, actually, what happened at Fort Hare, the former minister, Dr. Blade Nzimande, tried to, but the council refused. I mean, there was a point where the minister and the department flew to Alice, to Fort Hare, to meet with the council to get a sense of what is happening there. And the council refused to meet with the minister. The VC refused to meet with the minister. The second case in point is what is happening, in our view, at the University of Limpopo now, where there is, in our view, a clear collapse of governance. The council chair being elected for the third consecutive term against the statute, the university vice chancellor being there for almost 22 years now, and the act says you can only be there for two terms, maximum of 10 years. You know, even when you ask them questions, they are unable to respond to you because they are hoping that the minister of the department will make a mistake before putting in an independent assessor, and they'll take you to court and win on a technicality. Mm-hmm. So that is the kind of act that we have, which we are hoping by the end of this year that we would have, you know, made strides. Unfortunately, you can't just change it.
Yeah.
We must make proposal on it, and then we must take it back to the same institutions, including students, workers, management, councils, to consult with them, to do what you call the public meetings with them, so that public participation, so that they're able to empower the act or refuse this act over this clause over that one. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it will then come back to the committee, whether we agree or not with their submissions. And then we then take it to Parliament. Mm-hmm. If Parliament votes on it, it goes to the National Council of Provinces. If they vote on it, then we submit it to the President. Mm-hmm. It's a long process. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's something that we must do, because the act as it is, it's not really assisting us.
But we are hoping the process of consultation may happen this year.
We are. We have committed that we will start the process this year. We are looking at, our legal team is looking at all the clauses of the Higher Education Act. And, you know, they'll make problem statement on each clause. And then what is it that we're proposing? Mm. Then we'll have a conversation as the committee. Then we'll take it for public participation, hopefully before the end of the year. Would have went to all institutions of higher learning, all 26 universities in this country.
Unfortunately, most of what's been in the news the first 2 months of the year has been NSFAS. And I think today Deputy Minister Manamela went to WITS and he addressed students there and explained that, you know, NSFAS will be right there to assist them with those who've been defunded and so on. Your preliminary understanding, and I know you haven't sat down with them again, you said the meeting will be on Friday, of why the defunding happened to so many this time around. And it does seem to have been a technicality.
Yeah. So NSFAS, last year, you'll remember that the former minister, Dr. Bladen Zeman, made a pronouncement in January 2024 that NSFAS, for the first time since the 2015 fees must fall, so since the 2017 era, NSFAS will also have a loan scheme for the missing middle. Now, you had a number of students who applied for the missing middle. So these are students whose parents earn just above 350,000 per annum, but below 600,000 per annum, or if it's more than one child, around 750 or something like that. So NSFAS, then I don't know what is it that they did, but they then looked at the applications as if it was a bursary application, all of them, including these ones who could prove that I did not apply
not
for
there.
The bursary.
I
know that we, my parents earn above 350 and 600, but NSFAS
had funded me before.
No, these ones are new people.
Okay,
who are earning in this missing middle loan view, you know, and NSFAS funded them initially, and you know, during the year, then came back and said, no, we are defunding you. So when we had a conversation with them at the beginning of the year, we said to them, listen, it's not the fault of this child that you funded them
initially,
and because of your deficiencies in your system, you are defunding them. And this child says, by the way, I know my parents earn more than 350, but they earn less than 600. And I applied for a loan. So I went to school. I now owe a university 130,000. and concessions at universities that we must pay half of that in order to register, which is 65,000. We don't have. And we qualify for the loan. So we said to NSFAS, have concessions with universities. Say, let's have a special dispensation for these students. And you'll remember that on Wednesday when we met with vets, they were closing their applications
Friday,
on Friday.
Meant to be Friday.
And then we begged them and want to send our gratitude to the leadership at that institution, the vice chancellor and the chairperson of the board, who immediately after that, after meeting with the students, they agreed that they are going to postpone it. They are closing tomorrow.
Okay.
And we are hoping that by the time when they close, NSFAS will have, like you said, their adverts, the deputy minister is deployed there for the whole week to try and deal with these issues, because they would have closed down outside more than 3,000 young people who should be going to school, who should be going to doing the final year or second year, and you know, they could have been outside.
Part, though, of what brings us here, apart from the technicality we've just spoken about, is the delayed assessments and approval and payments of NSFAS. So if whatever the story may have been, things would have been concluded by the time some start in January. If the system was in such a way that by the time we are here, all things are resolved because NSFAS has processed everybody, because some of the issues of accommodation also stems from the late processing of some of these applications. Yeah. What's the problem there?
The reason why NSFAS is under administration is precisely because of their deficiencies, like one we've just mentioned now. NSFAS closed, we begged them that this thing of closing application around end of January, it affects the whole ecosystem. By the time you do assessments, there are students who are doing medical sciences who are long back at university. So open early and close around December. But between that time, clean up the data. Have those that you are provisionally funding, put it on the side. Don't say to a student, you are provisionally funding around December, and in January when they find school, you then come back and say, no, but your application does not have an ID, or there's this document that is missing. That is one. But two, there's also a perception that all problems in the sector are NSFAS related, which is not true. And I'll tell you why.
Yes.
2 weeks back, we met with the SIU, which is investigating the funding NSFAS with institutions. SIU, as we speak, they've collected from institutions more than 2 billion.
Yeah. That has not been facilitated back to the student.
Yes, that was not, you know how it got to them. NSFAS would have said, institution, I have deficiency in my system, but I'm going to give you this money.
Facilitate
fund these kids. Once you have funded them, give me a list of these kids that you are funding so that we are able to. But they did not do it. In fact, there are, you know, two billion, 450 million comes from VETS alone. That it's money that NSFAS would have paid for students to access higher education, and they did not access it. They would have been at VETS for a month, and because they don't have food, they don't have rest, they had to go home. But money was there for them. And that is why we are saying to SIU and these institutions that this closeout project must come to an end as soon as possible. And let's look at what was the social impact of an institution closing out. Where is that child? Many of them are probably now doing drugs. Many of them fell pregnant. You know, the social ills would have affected them. What is the social impact of all of that when government through NSFAS would have funded for for these students? So I thought I must just clarify that not all problems in the sector NSFAS, they do have their own problems. That is why we're very happy that the ministers appointed a 12-member board. I know that the students are not necessarily happy with not being represented.
Yes.
The discussion that they are continuing to have, but we are hoping that between the board and the current administration, they will map up a plan, you know, to seriously stabilize that entity. It's a more than 50 billion entity called NSFAS that, you know, it can be treated like it's a by the way. It's more than, it's bigger than almost all municipalities in South Africa except the four big metros.
Apart from you intervening with institutions that have been sitting with NSFAS money and not really administering it, what's the explanation for that?
From
the institutions themselves?
Well, some of them are saying, look, we would have at the end of the year. So what the process is that you fund this 30,000 students at VETS. At the end of the year, there must be a reconciliation. So the reconciliation must happen between an institution and NSFAS. And they are saying, we have begged NSFAS to do this reconciliation, but because of their administrative problems, they could not have done it. But reality is that these institutions, you know, if there's only one Pimelo with one ID number, you can't register in four institutions. You can apply in 10. But when you register, you register in one.
Yeah.
Even if, let's say, your first preference is you wanted to register at UCT.
Absolutely.
You registered at UCT, but then you realize that my parents are going to struggle to get there. So let me come closer to home. You go to VETS. There's no way that UCT must charge NSFAS for Pimelo for the whole year. VETS charges for Pimelo for the whole year, including RES, by the way.
Yes.
This is what the SIU report says. It says this institution would have charged NSFAS
just because I applied.
One student. Yeah, for one student, about four institutions would have charged at a particular year, which is really
unacceptable.
Unacceptable. So these institutions, we are going to hold them accountable. Unfortunately, we have people who don't like, we were, you know, the pit bulls of the sector, the likes of Professor Adam Habibi woke up one day and attacked us.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Your response to that?
It was expected. VETS University, there are institutions that you can't touch in South Africa because there are people who believe that these institutions are beyond reproach. I'm told I've not seen it today. We were very busy. I saw it on Friday night, and then I responded to him on Saturday, mentioning the sections that governs us doing oversight over public institutions. By the way, universities, we give them grants, more than 44 billion this financial year that we gave, and he's saying, literally, we can't do oversight over. We must not even ask what are they using that money for, because if we do, then according to him, we are interfering in the operations of the institution. Where we are going. I'm told today he wrote again, some long tweet again telling us that we can't touch institutions. He's been a vice chancellor himself. I'm surprised that he's raising these things now when he would have been a vice chancellor. Parliament would have been there. The portfolio committee would have been there. Institutions would have appeared before the portfolio committee. And he was a member of USAF, or USAF would have been called before the portfolio committee. And the modus operandi of how institutions are accounting would have happened at the same way that time. He kept quiet. I can tell you the reason why he's now, and he's not going to be the only one, is now it's because we asked uncomfortable questions to VETS University. But I want to appreciate the leadership there. The Vice Chancellor and the Chair of Council handled the meeting professionally, apologized where they felt that the register would have written a letter unnecessarily, apologized, and then we move on.
Yeah. Sure. Chair, thank you so much for coming through. Appreciate the time you've given us today, and all the best with your work this this week. We will have an in-depth conversation, I think, with what's happening with that SIU report, with Fort Hare and many others, because this is the only the beginning of some of your oversight work. So appreciate you coming through today and giving us a bit of feedback on some of your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Honorable Tebogo Letsie.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.